scattered all around America, but largely concentrated in Portland, New Jersey, Chicago, and New York City. Now, while those are great cities, they're also very cold cities. And at the time, the filmmakers were heavily dependent on outdoor lighting and natural lighting and everything. And it presented a big problem when you couldn't go outside and make movies a big chunk of the year. So they started making seasonal trips to Los Angeles, or to the West Coast. And they quickly figured out that Los Angeles was really the perfect place for the movies to be for many, many reasons. First off, you have beautiful sunny skies about, say, 90% of the year out here. Secondly, you've got the mountains, the beaches, the valley, the ocean, the desert, the snow. You've got about every kind of geography you could want within about a day's drive or so. And third, you had a lot of open and unused land just right for the picking. Now, not everybody was enthusiastic, however, about the arrival of the movies. In fact, several society people at the time felt movies were lowly and vulgar and common. And if you were associated with them, then thusly so were you. In fact, some early boarding houses put out signs on the front that said, "No dogs or actors. No dogs or show people." Note, dogs get first billing, so if you were an actor or in show business, you were pretty much one rung above maybe being a prostitute. However, as show business would prove to be a gigantic economic boom to Los Angeles and eventually would go on to be a multi-million dollar industry and a recognized art form, that perception would soon and eventually change. However, as I'd mentioned, there wasn't a need for a 100-acre cemetery, but what there was a need for studio space, because once the word got out that LA was the place to be, movie companies were flooding into the city. So in 1917, the Peralta Film Company leased a big back section back there of the cemetery, unused, I should preface, and set up their production company. In 1920, another film studio followed suit. All of that land was to eventually become RKO and Paramount Pictures. Now, the most scandal-plagued, notorious chapter of the cemetery's lengthy history kicks off in the 1930s. There was a man named Jules Roth. He was a gangster and a white-collar criminal. And in 1932, he was brought up on 21 counts of grand theft and security fraud. He fled and became the subject of a manhunt. He was located in upstate New York trying to pose as a farmer. He was extradited, brought back to Los Angeles, put on trial, and sentenced to 11 to 95 years in San Quentin. Years later in 1936. Now, he got released and he came back to Los Angeles because he wanted to visit his mom and dad's graves. They had been buried here many years ago. And upon that fateful visit, he met a young, lovely, red-headed woman named Alta Phillips. She was the daughter of a man who worked here at the time. In spite of the fact that Mr. Roth was married, he began an affair with Alta Phillips. It's speculated that she took him under her wing and taught him all about how this place works. It's also speculated that she helped him buy out the property. While details to date remain somewhat convoluted and unclear, what we do know is this. Jules Roth paid a little visit in 1937. He had complete and total ownership of this cemetery from 1939 until his death in 1998. Now, Jules Roth was a corrupt man. Where I come from, you say he was a crooked son of a gun. The man was so crooked he probably liked to eat soup with a corkscrew. Some of his antics include, he kept a fully stocked wet bar and pornography collection in the front office of the cemetery, which were discovered upon his death at age 98. He kept detailed spy records on all of the employees who worked here, their private lives, their comings and goings, etc. He had another cemetery in Southern California called Lincoln Park Memorial, where he got in trouble for burying children alongside the roadways and people at deregulatory and unsanitary 2 feet below the ground. Now, remember I was talking about that big strip mall up there? He sold off all that property because he was basically had purchased a yacht, which he was using as a tax write-off for scattering ashes with the IRS, when in fact he never scattered ashes. He only threw lavish cocktail parties aboard the yacht while he simply tucked people's last remains and ashes away in the cemetery's office in a closet. The IRS busted him and he owed millions in back taxes. He sold off all that property for $9 million to pay off the IRS. So, there's that. And my personal favorite one, Jules Roth hung a gigantic orange-colored flamed painting of hell in the lobby of the cemetery's front office. So if you've just lost a loved one and you're grieving, I really doubt it soothes the soul to look up and see a gigantic painting